1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Jenny Urich. I'm the founder of 1000 Hours Outside, and I'm so thrilled to be sitting here today with Rachel Marie Kong. Welcome.
Hi, Jenny. I'm so glad to be here.
I've just recently read Rachel's brand new book called Let There Be Art, The Pleasure and Purpose of Unleashing the Creativity Within You. Congratulations. It is so beautiful.
Thanks so much. We worked really hard on it.
It's so beautiful. I love it. And it spoke to my soul, Rachel. It's one of those books, almost like if you ever sit in maybe a church service or some sort of place where people are speaking and they're like, oh, these words are right to me. And there was a couple things in here that I was like, oh, it's like, this is right where I'm at, right what I needed to read very specifically. So I'll talk about that in a little bit, but I tend to brush off time for creative things. And in fact, one of my favorite things to do is to play the piano. And I hardly ever do it, Rachel. I only do it when I'm asked to, or a little bit at Christmas time. But even over the past couple years, I have not even done that. And so I got out of this book what I was hoping to get out of it, which is so much inspiration. So thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I it's really cool hearing all these different stories, you know, like, yeah. And just before the book came out, everyone was like, how are you feeling? Are you excited? What are you looking forward to? And I was like, you know, I think I'm done talking. I'm done writing. I'm done, you know, all the things that I have done, like I'm done with all that. And I just want to hear other people's stories, other people's experiences. And, you know, that moment when you interact with a book and you're just like you said, you're like, this was for me. I've been treasuring all of those stories. So it's really cool to hear you share that.
Well, that's really a unique take. It's like you put all of your soul into it and then you get to hear the other people's stories. That's a neat way to look at it. And I think it makes you feel maybe less nervous too about a book launch or launching anything new, is that you do your part of it and then the rest of it is for what other people take from it and what they do with it. So can you tell us about yourself? You are the founder of the Fallow House, all these cool things. You've been featured in Christianity Today, Proverbs 31, Encourage, this other book, Come Sit With Me. You're from New York, but now you're in North Carolina, right?
Yes,
with your husband and two children. You have a Bachelor's of Art in English with creative writing. Just tell us a little bit about you and about your path.
Sure. Okay. Well, I always love to say I am a writer of poems, prose, and other pieces. And I kind of stumbled upon that phrase maybe, I don't know, a couple years ago, but that the end of that end pieces, it just gave me such a nice spacious room to like really claim that I do different things in different seasons. Mm. And for so long, honestly, that was a hard part of like embracing my creativity, is I always felt like I had to choose one thing and that, you know, bouncing around, it was like, just pick something, right? So, but yeah, I mean, I started off as a young girl, just journaling and writing poems. And then that kind of tumbled into playing the piano and teaching myself and writing songs. And then I discovered I really loved writing essays and helping other people write their essays in college. Ooh. And I was like, what is this?
Wow.
And that all kind of, it was like this snowball effect where I just kept realizing, hey, writing, creativity, it has this common thread in my life. I've kind of been cultivating it for all of my life. And so that's led me to the last couple of years where I really decided, you know, I don't want to just do this for myself. I want to make space for other people to also cultivate their creativity. And that's where the Fallow House came in, and an online community that I created. And it's gone through many different iterations as we tried to figure out like, what is this and what are we becoming? But we essentially lead people through seasonal prompt journeys and just kind of, you know, getting people to write about things and create things and giving them the opportunity and space to do that. And now I'm an author. I wrote a book and I am so proud of it. Let There Be Art. It's like I said a little earlier, it's been so great launching it into the world and just hearing other people's stories and experiences. And I am also in part of Come Sit With Me, which is by Encourage, their newest book. And so that was such a tender experience.
You're an author times two.
Times two. Like, what is happening? But it's such a joy to kind of collaborate with friends. And that's what we did with this book, Come Sit With Me, for Encourage. And we all just kind of chose different areas of our life that, you know, maybe there's a tension punch in there or a history, or just it's hard. It's just hard. And we shared about those things and wrote about them in the hopes that others would find themselves in those stories too. So, and find hope in those stories.
Yeah.
So yeah. And now that kind of leads me to my everyday life. Aside from all these things, I am a mom of two crazy, wild, beautiful boys. Mm-hmm. And I am a wife. My husband's Korean and he's super cool. And I get brownie points for mentioning that. I should tell him, go listen to this podcast. But yeah, and I'm kind of now just in the season of winter is here. I love kind of just focusing on the seasons and kind of going along with them. And so with that, I am slowing down for the year and I am retracting and I am putting myself into this state of dreaming. What is the next year going to be like? And even preparing for my next book that I'll be writing. So yeah, that's a little bit of about me in a nutshell, right? Mm-hmm. A big nutshell.
Yes. Oh, it's a beautiful story. And it's interesting because you're a mom and you have two young kids and somehow you're fitting creativity into that. And that's one of the things you talk about through the book. We have all of these excuses and some of them feel very, very valid. But how do we weave creativity? It almost feels like a lot of times it's something that we only do in childhood. You know, I have my piano lessons in childhood and then we sort of switch over. Now we have all these responsibilities and we have these children. And so you have been able to continue to be creative and not only that, inspire others to be creative through these different communities. So what advice do you give to someone who would say, you know, I see what you're saying that it's important, but I don't really have time for that?
Yeah, I love this question. Love what you said is that we have all these excuses and that they're actually valid. And I agree with that. I think that we as adults have so many things going on. Like even as I say that, I'm like, ding, 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 the checklist right. is going off in my head. But like, I really do think that coming to a place where you can like kind of just press pause a little bit and look at your life and evaluate and honestly say like, yeah, my life is crazy right now, or my life is hard. My life is demanding. I have children. Ooh. I have a chronic illness. My finances are low, right? I really do think that there is something to looking at that, all those things, and just embracing and admitting this is where I am. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, it's almost as if I like to talk in seasons, you know, because I think that there's been a lot of hard and harsh words that have been said to many of us in terms of our creativity or passions of the past and things failing or dying, right? And so I think a lot of us carry guilt or remorse or pressure, like I should be doing this or I could be doing this. And I just think that like kind of framing that in terms of seasons and being able to say, I'm in a slow season. I am in a season where things are changing. My body has changed. I can't create the way that I used to. So when you evaluate that and when you look at those things and you face them honestly, that actually opens up the door for possibility and for you to be like, okay, well, I no longer do this. I can no longer do this. So what can I do? You know, and so my children, you know, you mentioned my kids, they are a part of what is in front of me right now. They are a part of what is currently in my hands, in my cards, right?
Yeah.
And so we live in a rental. I don't have a piano like I used to. Mm-hmm. We won't have one for a very long time. So I won't be playing music. I won't be making songs and writing songs, but I have my kids. And they lead creative lives and I can kind of hinge on that, you know? And so that's just one example in my own personal life, but I do really love welcoming people to consider truly where are you in your life and why? And once you're able to like make peace with that, then the possibilities truly are endless.
It fits so well with how you write, which is in a very open-ended, welcoming way that creativity doesn't have to look a certain way. And I love you included the piano in there. And that's one of the parts that really spoke to my soul because it's normally not in there. It's normally painting and writing. And those are the things that I am not good at. But then you had the piano in there. And I was like, oh, this is like directly for me because it is the thing you wrote. It matters to live knowing that you can pause in the middle of all that presses and choose to play your piano for the simple fact that you like the way it sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. Aww. You know what's funny? I love that you're sharing about this. I'm trying to think which chapter. One of my chapters, I actually talk about instruments in general, like, mm-hmm. and kind of returning to that instrument of your past, or taking that, you know, lesson that you always dreamed of, right? So I kind of like, I talk about instruments and I talk about breath, and I make mm-hmm. a whole nice little analogy out of all of that. But I had like serious pause when I went to talk about instruments in that chapter, because I really do think that that is one of the things that is hard, because a lot of us do have that musical background. Either we sang in the, you know, church Christmas play, or we took a piano or flute lessons as kids. And then you kind of grow up and sports take over. That's my story. Like, you know, you move and things change. So sports take over, or academics take over in college, clubs take over, then jobs, then children's family and children. And instruments, and they're also hard to access, right? They cost money, they're expensive, and they take up space. And so when I went to write this chapter, I really was like, is this reasonable to say to people, like, this is available to you, right? That you can and should return to that. And so I kind of grappled there for a little bit. But I don't know, in talking about the whole metaphor that I use in that chapter is this idea of like taking breath, right? And when you're singing, there are these moments, these commas in music where you take a breath, and it's like, it's a quick breath. It's not a long, extended, luxurious breath, but it's a quick breath that helps you keep going and singing through the phrase, right? And I liken playing an instrument to that. It's like, we need those small moments of rest and reprieve. Sometimes we don't always get these long breaks away, you know, a week in a cabin, a month sabbatical. We don't always get that. And sometimes, you know, we that's the big all. We kind of want just that. But sometimes we only get those 10-minute piano playing breaks, right? Mm-hmm. Or that, I don't know, 30-minute, you're practicing your scales and it's not a song. You didn't perfect anything. It's not Instagram worthy, but it's doing something for you, you know?
Right. And that 30 minutes or 10 minutes could so easily go to scrolling on a screen, but that doing these things. And my point about the piano and the music is that you cast such a wide net in this book, whether someone is a poet, or they want to tell stories and they want to make up characters, or they're a painter, or they're a sculptor, or they love to sing, all of these different things, they revive our soul. And so we take those small snippets of time, and if we can pour them into just tinkering around on the piano, that's what takes us back to those creative roots that we have. And I thought it was such an encouraging way to put it. And earlier you talked about just life being demanding. And I think it is, it's like that, it's such a good word to use, Rachel. It's like these things are demanding our time. And then the arts, they just sort of sit there and they're not demanding anything. Mm-hmm. So we have to be so intentional about grasping them and including them in what we do. I have to tell you, I have never done this before, but to prepare for this podcast, I watched a movie.
Which
I watched Inception.
No, you didn't.
I had already seen it. This is the thing. Okay, so it came out. It's older, 15 years ago, something like
super
that.
Super old.
And it came out. I was talking to my husband about it because I know we've already seen this, but I don't remember it. And it came out, I think, right after our second child was born. And they're so close in age. I bet I watched it. We certainly didn't go to the theater. So I bet we watched it like nursing babies. I'm sure I was in and out of the room. And so we watched it with our two sons the other night. We stayed up till 1 a.m. And whoa.
So good, right?
Yes.
So good.
I don't even totally get it. I'm like, that thing is spinning at the end. I'm like, what is happening here?
But I have so much respect for you right now. Yeah.
It was the first time I watched a movie to prepare for a podcast, and it was really fun. And you know, it just reminded me of how important all of this is. Mm-hmm. It was like that sort of nail in the coffin moment, which is probably the wrong phrase to use. But like that really big light bulb moment, like, oh, this like really matters, because this is really fun and it's really in depth. And someone wrote that story and drew all of these people into it. And now we're having conversations about it. And everyone's like, what is really going on here?
Yes.
So tell us what you love about that movie. And then also I watched the Hans Zimmer, the video on YouTube.
Yes.
So can you just talk to us about those couple things and why you love that and what those did for you?
Oh, gosh. Well, first of all, I'm definitely like trying to calm my heart rate right now because I'm just overly excited, geeking out, nerding, all the things. So I'm with you. I first saw that movie years ago when it first came out. I was probably a college student. I was probably uber immature. And it went right over my head. I was like, what is this? Why is it spinning? Why is he old? Why? And I just left it there. Like I just left it in that category of movies that you'll never understand. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how I happened upon it again, but I watched it and then I was like, oh, that question of why like stuck with me, and then watched it again. And I was like, oh my gosh, I watched it with my husband. I was like, babe, this is not just an action movie. Like this is a love story. This movie is about a father who is trying to get back to his kids. It's about a husband who is reeling in the guilt of losing his wife at the fault of his own, right? Right. It's about trauma. It's about memory. It's about adventure. Risk. Yes. Risk. Oh my gosh.
Trust. It's about trust. Yes. All those trust of all those levels.
And it's just so beautifully, like you said, it matters because this is a concept coming from someone's imagination. And there's collaboration with Hans Zimmer and Christopher Nolan, the director, and they're writing this thing. And now so many people have seen this movie and so many people have so many thoughts about it. And that song Time, I mean, if you listen to it on YouTube and you look at all the different comments that are left on that song, people are like, there's just something about that song that moves someone so deeply. But yeah, that movie, I think it was the beginning of me kind of realizing I have a serious passion for movies because they are such a stunning way to present a topic that matters, right? And so like with Inception, it's a love story about a father trying to get back home to his children. And at the core, it's almost like a blow pop, right? You've got this shiny exterior that's really sweet and you have all this extra fun stuff, the action scenes, the movie stars, all the cameos, right? But the core, basic core of that movie is like, this father wants to get back to his kids that he loves and hasn't seen in a very long time. Mm-hmm. And that's what matters. It doesn't matter if the top is spinning. What matters is that he got home to his children. And that's what art does. It opens up your eyes to see like that there's a true deep message here. And it matters for your life and for the people that you love. That's what I love about it. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's a good movie. That was really fun. It was a fun thing, Rachel. It like brought this moment of connection within my own family to sit and watch it and for everyone to just be really wide-eyed at the end of it. And because I didn't really remember it. And so it was really neat to watch it through the lens of reading your book. I'd read your whole book first and then watched the movie. And so it was really a cool lens to see the movie through, and it brought a lot of connection. And then you related this Hans Zimmer music and to play.
Yes.
Which we're all about. That's a big thing here, right? It was 1,000 hours outside. We're trying to get out to play. We're trying to return to play and find the value in play, both for now and for what's to come. And you have a whole chapter in here on play. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about the music, how music and play are related? And then I actually have a couple other questions about play here too.
Absolutely. So that song in particular, I have to take us back to 2020. I got signed to write this book. I actually wasn't planning on writing this book. I was planning on pausing and taking a moment to step away. And it just happened through a series of moments where this was an opportunity that was presented to me. And so here we are, we're in the middle of the pandemic. I am pregnant. And also, I didn't know then that I was, you know, beginning to walk through a chronic illness journey. And I had no idea at that time. It wasn't until after I was like diagnosed. And so there's storms brewing in the world and in my life. And so I'm listening to this song Time, which is just it's instrumental. It's deep. It evokes emotion. And so it just, that season where so much was at stake, you know, people are hurting in the world. I'm hurting. And it just, as I wrote this book, that was the soundtrack of this book. I would just listen to it and I'd say, what do you want to say to people that are hurting? What do you want to say to people that need hope? What do you want to say about art and that it's not frivolous at all, but that it's meaningful and that it's healing? And what do you want to say, right? And so I'm so deep in these emotions, right? And yeah. That song, I had it on repeat on YouTube, on my playlist and everything. And so One day I'm listening to it on YouTube and the autoplay shuffles the song to a different version of it. And it's this rock and roll version. And it's this live performance of Time. And I'm just watching it and I'm like, what is going on? It's almost like this, it's just fantastical, right? And then Hans Zimmer steps out on the stage, and I write about this, and he has the biggest smile on his face playing this song. And he's just like literally rocking out, looking so cool. And I was like, is this the same song that brought me to tears just a moment ago? Like, it was like, I couldn't reconcile the possibility of that. And so I did kind of do a deep dive into some interviews with him, and where he says, you know, the thing about music is that it's always playing. You have to have fun with these kinds of situations. And that rocked my world. It rocked my world, but it reminded me of my husband, who, this guy who knows so much about music, would just pull out his guitar late at night and just play it. Not because he was practicing for church, not because he was trying to record a video for YouTube or anything, but he was just playing scales for fun. Yeah. And I think I know that. And for some of us, it's not music, right? For some of us, it's gardening. For some of us, it's cooking, right? To play.
I love that you included cooking in there. Yes. It's such a creative outlet.
It is. Yes. And it's, you get to play with your hands. There's textures. Mm-hmm. It's a sensory experience. For some of us, it's knitting and crochet. For some of us, it is writing. We get to play with our words and wrestle and move them around. So I just think it is so important to reclaim that as adults, to never lose that, I should say, rather. We should never lose that. And I do think it's one of those things, you know, we're so used to being used. We have jobs that we need to produce. We need to be used. We have to reach goals. We have tasks and assignments to actually complete. We have people, children who are dependent on us. And it's not, that's not a matter of play. Like, their lives are literally in our hands. And so I do think that play begins to take the back burner, but it is one of those things that sustains us. And I truly think grounds us to the heart of God. You know, in a later chapter, I talk about joy and delight and surprise and how those are characteristics of God. And you experience that when you play, when you put yourself in situations where you're not taking them seriously. You know, you're opening yourself up to wonder and curiosity. It's deeply, deeply important.
Do you find that you have so much pulling at you, even now? I mean, you launched a book and there's a lot that goes along with it, that you are constantly having to reassess? Or how do you, this is my question. So you say we shouldn't lose our playfulness, but I would imagine that a majority of us have lost it. And maybe even we go through seasons where it comes back or we lose it again. But this is probably a common question that people ask. It's like, well, if we're in this spot and we hear what you're saying and we've read it, how do we relearn that?
Yeah. Well, I think a hard word to learn how to say is no. In the last couple of years, that's been a word that I have learned and had to learn how to say is no. Saying no to invitations of where you're doing and being useful. And even if it's a good thing, you know, like you're serving in a particular capacity, there's an invitation to help someone or to be a part of something, right? A movement, a group, whatever, an event. I think that, like, saying no and reclaiming time is so key, because really there are so many things that we put on our calendar, and it's like you literally do pack yourself out to the point where you don't have time for anything else. You don't have time for rest. You don't have time for play, right? Those two things. So I think that learning how to say no is a really good life skill and a really good survival skill.
Have you heard of the Institute for Excellence in Writing, or as many like to say, IEW? For more than 25 years, they've offered award-winning language arts curricula for students of all ages. Most would agree that IEW is the number one writing curriculum. Each year at Christmas, IEW gives 12 days of gifts that consists of products, downloads, video and audio resources, and more. On the final day, they ship a special gift right to your door. Register now to take advantage of all the gifts and help your students become confident communicators. Register at IEW.com.
And then I think, like, kind of going back to this idea of seasons, right? Like, for instance, I'll give an example. I live in a townhome. I don't have space for a piano, a keyboard. We tried it and we don't have space for it. And I remember the day when I had to like hand that off and I was like, so sad, right? So right now, my season of life doesn't look like making music, although I wish and I want it to, but I get to play in other ways. I take walks in my backyard and sometimes I sketch the different things that I see. I don't post those things to social media. I don't tell other people about that, but I have found other ways in which I can partake in things where my usefulness, it doesn't matter. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big thing, is like participating in something where it doesn't matter that you're going to be graded, that mm-hmm. you're providing or producing something that needs to be, people need it, you know?
Right.
So I think like looking at your season and just allowing yourself to try something new. And mm-hmm. even if it means you look like a fool doing it.
Right.
My husband is a youth pastor and he has told me time and time again that he loves playing games and icebreakers with kids. And I'm a very serious person and I'm like, mm-hmm. and I'm also an introvert. And so I'm like, you know, why do we need to do the icebreakers? Like, I'm not an icebreakers person. Can't we all just, you know, shake hands, greet,
ask, get to the depth of it.
Exactly. Right. And he has told me time and time again, icebreakers matter because it allows people to like make fools of themselves and to be silly and to fail and to mess up in front of other people.
Wow, and to risk. That's yes. really neat.
And that prepares.
I hate icebreakers too, life. But they do that.
It does. And that
pushes you out.
There you go. And you learn that as a skill. You take that with you.
Yeah.
And so play does the same thing. Like, you're in this environment that doesn't matter for work. You can take mm-hmm. a risk. You can make something up. It could be wrong. It could be silly and absurd. And it doesn't matter, but it strengthens something in you that mm-hmm. allows for that curiosity to continue. But it also, it benefits you in for real life, you know? So,
yeah, I like what you said in the book about paying attention. You say, we learn to play once again by paying attention, by returning to the things that once brought us sheer pleasure. And that goes along with what you're saying about time. It's like when we're so busy, we don't have time to pay attention, mm-hmm. even to pay attention to ourselves. What am I missing? Am I feeling too worked up and too stressed? And what is it that would change? And we just don't even have time to have that introspection. And so I really love that phrase about, well, you have to have a lot of time if you want to be able to pay attention, I think. And the chapter with play had one of my favorite poems. Do you have favorite poems
from this book?
Yeah,
I actually do. I do. I could actually read my favorite for you if you'd like.
Okay, let's trade. How about you read your favorite and then I'll read mine?
That sounds great. I know exactly where it is. When I was recording this for the audiobook, I was like swallowing tears and trying I love this poem so much.
You have so many poems in this book, so I'm so curious which one's going to be yours.
They're so good. Okay, so this is from chapter 5, Let There Be Home. And it's a poem by Elizabeth Mowers. It's just so beautiful. And it speaks to me because of the season of life that I'm in with my two little kids. And here it goes. There is scarcely a memory of yours separate from mine. The shape of your days, for better or worse, formed by my words, my choices, my thoughts, though they always reach to enfold. Your learning, your discovery served to you with my hands. But now there is that first flutter of separate lives. There, just below my ribcage, I press my hand, searching for the shift, sometimes sharp and sometimes just a slight hollow feeling. You have whole hours and days now that stretch without my face in your view. Experiences, conversations, and new pieces of information obtained without my ever knowing. I rejoice in your expanding universe, bask in the radiance of the world at your grasping, still chubby hands, I delight to watch you go marching up mountains of all sizes, made of whimsy and imagination. It's just this small ache at my side, just here below my rib cage, where I'll rest my hand as I watch you climb.
Okay.
It kills me every time. I'm crying. Yeah.
So am I. Wow. That was incredible.
So I read that poem in my audiobook recording session the same day that my first son went off to his first day of school. And we were like running late. And so we drop him off and I had like 2 minutes to spare. And then we had to go and be on schedule for this audiobook recording. Wow. And I got in the car and I was like, babe.
Wow. Gosh, and then I had such to read a that. Thing, though. It is such a thing.
It is.
Wow. Did she encapsulate that? I mean, just so accurately that for so long, everything is together. And then slowly by slowly, they're out in the expanding world.
Yeah.
And it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's bittersweet.
Mm-hmm.
That is incredible. All right, we're trading. I'm going to read you mine.
Yes.
Mine was in the chapter called Play. And this one's called Pieces by Danny Nichols.
Mm.
Kids remind me that the world is new, even when it seems old. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches become fuel for pirates and archaeologists when eaten out of a plastic baggie in the backyard. The sun rises every day, but we have to get up and see it today, this very moment, because look, Mom, the sky is pink. I get called to watch sprinklers, hawks, the delivery truck, chipmunks, and 1,000 other daily miracles to pause in my pursuit of boring grown-up to-dos and engage in wonder.
Mm-hmm.
So good. This book is filled with so much great poetry. And I loved, there was another one I really loved from Ashley Whittemore.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, because this one's short. Can I read this one too?
Yes, absolutely.
Or do you want to read it?
I have a feeling, which is it the porches one?
Yes.
Yes, I know. Yeah, it's so good.
You want to read it?
I don't know.
It's on page 171.
That's a good one.
Okay, well, here's what's super interesting, and I just noticed it. Both of these are called pieces.
Mm-hmm.
The two that I picked out that really stood out to me are both, they both have the same name.
Oh, that's the category. Those are the pieces in each chapter. But hey, let's go with that.
Oh my goodness. I tell you what, Rachel, this whole thing is so embarrassing. I like have called people the wrong name on here. So I had some author on and I mispronounced the name of the book. Like the whole thing. Oh goodness. But this is life. This is the point.
You actually read the book. Like you get an A+.
Oh, they have the
same name. You can't drop from there.
And you say, oh no, that's the category. You idiot.
I love it.
Okay.
I found it. Right. Yeah, she has two in this book, and I just love them both. Yeah, this is from the chapter. Which chapter is this? Let There Be Fellowship, which is one of my favorite chapters. There was a time when the news came on at 5, and books were sold in stores, and notes were written by hand, and the grocers knew your name, and children played outside, and food was prepared in kitchens, and phones were attached to walls. And porches were for people, not packages. Ashley Whittemore.
Wow. The end of that, it was a surprise twist.
Yep.
And it was so good.
Yeah.
It really stuck out to me. I thought it was interesting in the book, you include a lot of the big names. These authors, C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and all of these ones that most people have heard of mm-hmm. and have had experience with and things like that. But then you turn around and you say, we've come to believe that meaningful things come easy and that beautiful things can only come for an elite few. So you're talking about a little bit about imposter syndrome and also about this notion that maybe someone else has already done it. All the good books have been written. All the best ideas. You're right. They say the books have all been written and the best ideas for business already belong to someone else. They say that all of what is out there is bigger and better than what they could ever come up with and create. What do you say to that?
Gosh, that's exactly why I included these pieces in this book. Is because, yes, I wanted to take these messages that have already been shared by those we know, Langle, C.S. Lewis, right? and reiterate and repeat and say, yes, what they're saying matters. But I also wanted to support that with words from people that don't have big names. And so the very process of curating the poems for this book, I would reach out to someone and I'd say, you know, hey, can I use this poem that you wrote? I want to feature it in a chapter in my book. And they were like, what? Me? They didn't write these poems for this book. I literally scrolled and I curated and I said, okay, where does this piece fit? Because this piece is gorgeous. This poem is amazing. But yeah, I think that, you know, there's a very real history to art that I did not go into in this book, because that would be a whole book in of itself. But the history of art and the very reality that there is an elitist mindset when it comes to art. That's why we have certain pieces hanging in museums and, you know, millions of eyes go to gawk at these pieces by these well-known names, right? There's a literal actual history of why we would sense this feeling of, well, I'm not within the elite. My art doesn't matter, right? And so I kind of did want to challenge that. Little old me, I wanted to challenge that and say, no, your art does matter. Why? Because it's not about the product. It's about the process, right? Mm-hmm. It's because the very thing that you are doing, if it's bringing healing to you, if it's bringing peace, if it's allowing you to experience play, to experience exhale, like when you play the piano, you experience exhale, right? If for any other reason, the process of you making it matters for that. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like what I wanted to say. Like the whole premise of my book is let there be art, like as in, yes, you have the permission to create, but also like, let's take it back to that story in Genesis when God is creating, he speaks, let there be light. And that light pushes back the boundary of darkness. So yes, let there be art in our lives in that same way that when we do these things, when we either create them ourselves or we partake of them by watching a movie and experiencing it by the hands of someone else, that we too are in a way, in a sense, pushing back the darkness in our own lives. And illuminating what is good. Mm-hmm. So yes.
Right. And even if that doesn't go out into the world, even if that's not on Instagram, even if it's not in a book, it's changing us. And because it's changing us, we're touching the people that are in our circle in a different way.
Exactly.
Coming to our lives from a different place because we have changed. And I think when you talked about reaching out to these different people and asking if their poetry could be in your book, which I'm sure was so neat, what a cool experience. That brings me to this part that you included, which I was so surprised about, Rachel, you included small businesses. And this was another one of the parts that really spoke to my heart because small businesses are very difficult. I mean, you're up against Jeff Bezos and, you know, and his goal is to drive everyone out. I read this story about how there was this diapers business, diapers.com, and they sold diapers out of their garage. And they had some sort of a deal and you could get diapers. And it was like he spent some exorbitant amount of money to drive out their little business. Yeah. And it's just in this world of huge and large and huge companies and global economies, it's so difficult to be a small business owner. And yet you just don't really know where it's going to take you. And mm-hmm. that story that you just shared about bringing in these other poets and these other writers is an example of that, that you don't know. I mean, you walk down this path and it's really risky to have this online community that you have, and to write a book is very risky. People are going to leave reviews and your heart is out in the world. And yet through that, you're opening the door for opportunity for other people and you're giving other people a chance for their voice to be out in the world in a different way. So tell me why you included small business in a book about art.
You want the real heart confession? Is that is one of my biggest dreams, is to have my own small business, which I mean, I begun that process last year, but it's scary. You're right. It's so scary because of so many different things. Am I going to fail? Is this right? Where is this going? How will this provide? And so, yeah, you know, the story that I share in there is just such a tender moment that my best friend and I had as we watched this show on the Magnolia Network. And, you know, I was really touched by something someone said, and he said, small businesses it's not about money. It's about people. And I think for all my life, as someone who is creative and in the arts and stuff, I've always been like, I'm not an entrepreneur. I'd rather give away everything than have to worry about the money. And I'd rather help people than charge them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no. When done right, small businesses are about people. They really are. And so, I think that was a step of faith for me to write that for myself and from myself. But it was also to honor what I was seeing, and again, right in the middle of the pandemic, and you're just, small businesses they need help. Mm. They need support. Right. And we all kind of realize just how important they are, but also fragile. Right. And so, and also opportune, right? How it's in moments like that where, maybe war or, just extreme suffering, whatever, that these small businesses kind of are birthed, right? Because they see needs and they seek to fill them. So, I think that whole chapter was a step of faith for myself and maybe to claim something as true for others.
Mm. It's interesting because I see you as already having that. Isn't that interesting? Someone else's perspective, because that's what made me think when you're talking about, and I'd already written this down because I really wanted to talk about the fact that you included it because, you captured it all of these different ways that people can bring their creativity into the world. But I'm thinking about you you have the Follow House and you have your own book and you're a coach. And so I'm looking at it as you already are a small business entrepreneur. Gosh. Isn't it interesting how people view you versus how you view yourself sometimes?
I am those things and I am so small in those things and learning how to embrace those. And I think that's the process of creativity is you could be shining in one area, right? Like I have this amazing book out and it's touching lives and the writing is great, right? And I am shining in that area of my creativity, but in my small business creating, I'm starting out small and scared and I don't know what to do and I'm failing and I probably have taxes that are falling out of somewhere, just that's life is somewhere you're always learning and taking that first step. So confession, that is where I'm learning and being brave in my creativity.
Yeah. I love that part. And I'm excited to watch it. Growing Florette. I didn't get to watch ahead of time, but I can't wait to watch it. And you had this quote in there from Erin Benzekim. Well, being a small business owner was nothing she'd ever wanted. She found herself realizing it was better than anything she'd ever imagined.
Yeah.
And that's true because through the hard comes growth and there's a lot of good. There's a lot of just rubbing shoulders with other people. And I think that's the coolest part of it. It's about people.
Yeah, it is. And she specifically, that line stuck out to me because all her life, she was like, I'm not this kind of person. Like, I'm not an entrepreneur. I can't have a business. I don't have that skill set. That's not for me. And so all her life, she kind of drummed that message. Mm. And when she started taking these small, you would love the show. It's 4-episode series. But when she started taking those small steps, growing in her backyard, even through debt, she grew and grew and realized I do have these gifts and the way that I want to serve and help people, this is the medium to do that. And that's what blew my mind and opened up my scared heart to think, if this is how I'm looking and wanting to serve people, actually a small business is the perfect way to do that. So,
And I think it's neat to look at through the lens of art. I heard there's this phrase, the beautiful art of building a family. You open eyes to different forms that art can take. It's not just the painting on your wall, the photograph that you took. There's so many creative outlets in our world and we can grasp them and enjoy them. And I really loved the book, Let There Be Art, The Pleasure and Purpose of Unleashing the Creativity Within You. It's beautiful to have on your shelf, but just very inspiring to read. Can you tell people, Rachel, where they can find you? Because you also do coaching and editing. So tell us a little bit about the nitty gritty there. Where can people find you? Newsletter, the Follow House, all of the things.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I do lots of different things. And I am a creative coach and an editor and the founder of the Follow House. So the best way to find me is rachelmariekong.com. You will find all the information on coaching, on my creative community, as well as my books. And I'm also, I love Instagram. I love to hang out there for the community.
And yours is beautiful.
Thank you.
It's got a really cool look to it. And that's neat too, because you can create there, you can create digitally. And even the websites are beautiful. I went to the Fowl House and it's kind of like this dark.
Super dark.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
It's got this vibe to it. As soon as you open
the dark side.
I really, really liked it. Because it's different. And when you go to your website, you say, may you find welcome in my words, light leaking where darkness dominates. May you know and be known in the stories I tell, in the stories you live. Oh, so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's very welcoming. Like what your presence is very welcoming and drawing people in through the book, through the website, through the community. And I love that. It all is very cohesive.
Thanks, Brent. Well, that's, I really think like that is the message of my life, right? Mm-hmm. Like I found light in the darkness and I just want others to experience and know the same. And so the dark websites and my dark Instagram, that is all on purpose. I remember when I intentionally made that shift, I was like, you know what? We're going to embrace the dark because there's something about it. And you as someone who, you know, enjoys the outdoors, is very, you know, enjoys seasons and the lessons that they bring. There's something so important about the dark,
about nighttime. It changes our melatonin. It actually does a whole lot for us on a physiological level, but it's real. Those are the moments of wonder. Sometimes people talk about that. Like I had this mom on the podcast, and I'm going to ask you this question in 1 second, but talking about a childhood memory. And we usually focus on one that's outdoors, but you can be thinking of something because you talk about childhood here. It's a childhood memory, play, outdoors, creativity, something like that. But she said she had a single mom and her mom was never able to go on the field trips. And then there was one field trip that was in the middle of the night because there was a shooting star or some sort of, it's something to go see. I can't remember exactly what it was. And so the field trip was at 4 a.m. and her mom was able to go. It was the only one her mom was able to go. And she cried. She said, because our whole class, we were in the 4th grade and my mom and we met in the middle of the night and we watched this thing shoot through the sky together. And my mom was there and then we wouldn't have pancakes. My mom had to go to work. And there is something really unique about darkness. And there's even a book called The End of Night. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's about how what we've lost because we've lost darkness.
Yes.
Because there's so much ambient light all the time.
Yes. There's a masterclass on that by Matthew Walker. And he talks about like the importance.
I love that you had masterclass in there. I had written that down because I love masterclass too. I watched this really, it was like a venture photographer. And now his name is slipping my mind. Something Chin, but I can't remember his first name. Oh, there's so many cool masterclasses. I really love masterclass too.
Good.
Yeah. They have ones in there for entrepreneurs, which is really neat. So anyway, okay. This has been such an awesome conversation. I am so thankful that we got to connect and I have really enjoyed your book. It is changing my life and in a lot of ways it's changing my life, the ways that I view things and view my time. We always end with a favorite outdoor childhood memory of yours, but it could be like a creative one, whatever you sort of think fits with the book and the conversation that we've had today.
Absolutely. So I don't think I've ever like shared this anywhere, like on a podcast or anywhere. But like I said earlier, I used to play the piano and the keyboard. I went through a season of sickness in high school where it just an autoimmune and it involved my throat, my voice. So my singing was impacted by that. So I started writing my own songs so that I could sing what I wanted to sing. And so I used to sleep with my keyboard, like literally in my bed. I would go to sleep with it and I'd wake up with it, but I would stay up late at night and I would make up melodies and whatnot. And I actually wrote a song about the moon and nobody knows this. Like I've never shared. I'm not going to sing it now. Maybe I'll do that another time. But yeah, I just remember like sleeping with my keyboard and it brought me such peace and solace. And I would like stay up late and just like write songs on my keyboard. So
do you know what I love too? You know, the parent that allows their child to sleep with a keyboard.
That's so
cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot that'll be like, okay, you know, you can sleep with a stuffed teddy bear, but probably not your really hard keyboard. That's really special. A song about the moon. This has been absolutely delightful. I'm so thankful that we got to talk. And thank you for taking the hour out. I know you have a lot going on, but taking the hour out to be with us.
This was fun for me. So thanks for having me.